This FPL season has definitely been go, go, go. A nonstop hustle all the time. Matches, deadlines, unexpected blank and double game weeks, on top of everything the real world has had in store. Sometimes you need a moment to turn off and hit reset. That's when you reach for Coors Light. It's made to chill. For me personally, supporting Fulham during this last year has been a true roller coaster ride. Honestly, when that Adama Traore goal flew past Areola in the 92nd minute of game week 31, the only thing that saved my mental state, the only thing that calmed my nerves, was cracking open a Coors Light. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. That way, you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. And listen, everyone, summer is pretty much here. It's about to get hot in New York. An ice-cold Coors Light is such a perfect way for me to beat that summertime heat. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Hail cheaters. Welcome to the Always Cheating Podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you?
Hey, Josh. I'm good. All things considered, not owning Kane, but I guess what we need to figure out on this episode is, should I feel bad that I don't own Kane, or should I feel bad that I don't own Gareth Bale? I'm so confused.
Yeah. The Kane thing is interesting. I mean, I guess we can just get right into it right off the bat, right? Because he goes for 19 points, 2 goals and 2 assists. And there was, I think it was our friend Mikey on the Slack was like, how do you deal with not getting, like knowing that you could have had this person, they go off and you didn't bring them in. And how do you manage them? There's no good answer to this question, but you as somebody who plans to get Kane, you decided to wait 1 week, right? You weren't going to burn points to do it or did prefer not to, you know, how are you feeling about the Kane explosion?
Well, you can't feel good missing out on those points. Sure. And I think the real crux of the problem is, even if you get Kane for game week 28, it's like, you know, you're dating a woman after your friend dated her. so to speak, you're never going to get those points back. For me, looking at my team going into game week 27, where I failed was I looked at my team and there were two ways to look at it. One was I have a decision to make here. And the other was I'm overthinking it. Don't make the wrong decision. I chose to say, Brandon, you're overthinking it. Don't make the wrong decision. And therefore, I made no decision at all.
Right.
If you follow my logic here, I should have done was had the courage to just make a bloody decision and get Kane in. So I'm looking at my midfield Friday night before I go to bed, and it's Bruno and Salah. These are the only two players that I could move out to get me the cash to turn Calvert-Lewin into Kane. Right. And, you know, we can sit here podcasting Sunday night and it's plain as day. The story was already written for Salah. He was, you know, and Liverpool are in terrible form.
That Fulham match was like just, I mean, like, okay, yeah, Fulham better defensively for sure, have tightened things up, but you're still talking about Liverpool at home to a relegated team. He gets subbed early at midweek, and Klopp basically says he's able to play on Sunday because he got subbed early. So you kind of know, you feel like he might be kind of locked into this match. At least I thought that. I mean, clearly we were all wrong, you know. I mean, not that we were like loudly advocating for captain him or anything, but like,
sure,
yeah, you know, I thought he'd do better than nothing.
But for Mikey, you just have to accept this was the worst case scenario for non-Kane owners, and you just have to own it. You have to accept that this is the reality.
Yep.
You're not going to win every game week. You're not going to win every season, and you've got to roll on. Now, I look at my team now, and I'm like, oh, well, duh, dummy. The obvious move was move Salah to Gareth Bale because he's the man.
Right.
And then you move DCL to Kane. Yeah. And guess what? You're top of the league. And I can't believe I didn't do that.
Right. And then, and then Captain Kane too, right?
You know, oh, yeah. Triple Captain.
Captain. Yeah. Bring that chip back that you just used last week. Use it again.
if I had the foresight, I could have done that. I could have retroactively untriple captained Mo Salah in game week 26. We could have made it all work. It's all classic, possible.
Every time you have anyone has a bad game week, you, at least for me, I do the same thing as you. In my head, I like reverse engineer the perfect scenario, exactly what I should have done. Even if I wasn't thinking about doing those moves, I have now in the rearview mirror, I'm like, oh yeah, I would have done all. I would have found a way to make the perfect move. So it's a 2000. I don't say it again because I didn't say it the first time, but just as a reminder, because we talked about this before, you know, we're talking about 2000, 2200, whatever number of points you're going to score this season are. You just can't get too annoyed about a less than 20 point return, right? It's just like, it's just not that much.
Yeah. And I accept that I probably have some players like going into the West Ham Leeds match. If Leeds, I'm starting all three of my Leeds players, Dallas, Rafinha, Bamford. If Leeds do put on a great performance and I reap some points there, I'll be fine. And I can kind of get away with it. So the fact that this game week is not over yet has some promise. And for me, like the true hindsight game is when I was looking at the options to burn for, to bring Kane in, it was moving Salah to, and at no point, and I think we were pretty clear on last week's episode that the Bruno out brigade is not associated with always cheating at all.
That's not our brand. No.
So I was looking at Salah, and like the two players I was going to bring in were either going to be Jesse Lingard or Saka at Arsenal. Right, and so I have to admit the thought of bringing Bale in as well as Kane never crossed my mind. So, you know, you just kind of can't beat yourself up about the hindsight stuff.
Good to be honest with yourself about that stuff. Yeah, I agree. And so my move was, I moved Dominic Calvert-Lewin to Antonio. So we'll see tomorrow how that move works out. I do have Kane. I didn't captain him, which I honestly didn't really consider. So again, it's that hindsight thing. I can't even pretend that that was something that was on my mind. I did vice captain him. So if there was a way that I could reverse engineer Gundogan not playing in today's match, that
anything's possible in today's episode. I'm saying that right now, Josh.
But yeah, I'm on 52 points with Rafinha. I have Rafinha as well and Antonio tomorrow. And I cracked the top 10K, which I was excited about. First time I did that this season, it looks like. With auto subs included, I'm at like 9,940. And it's pretty I'm already in that mode now where like when Son got an assist, even though it was to Kane, that actually I dropped like 1,000 when that happened. And so it's like when you're, you know, when you're even like 22K, going between 22 and 23 is like whatever. But once you're in that like 9,000, it's like every like little every, you know, someone gets a yellow card and it feels like, you're like, damn, like, oh, like there goes my chance. So it's, but it feels, you know, I'm very excited to crack that. And so, the big thing for me tomorrow is I've got to sweat no Bamford. And I guess I'm sweating no Bamford through at least game week 29 now, because I've got, the one move I would consider actually would be Watkins to Bamford. And just like, because I am really frustrated with Walker. Like, do we just think if it's an entire season long, is it still bad luck, or is the guy just not quite the finisher that we hope he is?
I think that's slightly unkind. I do think that Watkins has...
He's got 10 goals, so I don't want to totally...
This is not Che Adams territory by any stretch. Like, Watkins, I think, at the end of the season, will look back and say, Watkins proved that he deserves to be at this level and that he was an integral part of that Villa attack that was largely effective when they were all fully fit. The loss of Grealish is obviously a problem for him, but he still did put a shot off of the crossbar this weekend. He is getting one or two opportunities. The thing with Watkins is he needs four or five big chances in order to come through as an FPL.
Yeah, he's going
to
blow three for sure. That's a given. Yeah.
Yeah.
And without Grealish there, I mean, he's now in four blanks and five, and then the other return was just, you know, one assist. So
would you actually move Watkins, who plays in 29, out? And so you know, the larger conversation that we've been having for the last month now, it seems, is how many players do you want to field for game week 29 when just eight teams play?
Yeah.
Would you would you use a transfer to move Watkins out? Would you actually do that?
Yeah, I would consider it. I mean, because, you know, some of the moves I'm considering are pretty small moves, right? You bring in Soufal or whatever, but they play Arsenal. Wouldn't shock me if Arsenal scored in that match. So maybe I'm getting 2 points out of him. And the thing about having Bamford is, you know, if Watkins does anything, his ownership is pretty low. If Bamford does something, his ownership is going to be huge, right? So
yeah.
As a defensive move, I think it might make sense to have.
So then there are two ways to look at the Watkins then. In your situation where you're kind of in shield mode and trying to protect rank, Bamford is the better pick in your mind. And if you're looking to climb, if you're looking to gain rank, Watkins is more of a sword potential.
Or maybe like Lacazette or something. I mean, he didn't even start today.
That was a curveball, Josh.
Okay, but if we're talking about real, I mean, I don't want to get right into the game week 29. It's actually funny that we're doing this because the theme of this week's podcast, Brandon, is forgotten game weeks. Anyone who's done fantasy for a long time knows all about forgotten game weeks. When you've got a lot of double game weeks happening. We're in one, right? It's actually the third week in a row where we have one.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so that's just, you know, you have more than 10 matches in a game week, or you have the blank game weeks, and game week 29, which is coming up in a couple weeks, is an FA Cup weekend. And so, like, I think it's something like 60% of the teams just don't have a fixture. Right.
Yep.
So it's very hard not to focus on those matches, but what often ends up happening is you kind of completely ignore, or you just sort of like have like a very pro forma, like, I'm just going to roll my team out for this other game week, and you don't take it seriously. And you know, game, like, seasons can be won or lost on these forgotten game weeks.
Right. What can happen is you've been so focused on building a game week 29 team that game week 28 happens, and you're looking at your game week 29 team. You're like, these guys all have terrible fixtures.
Yeah. I mean, we have some really interesting things to talk about here in game week 29 and 28. And, you know, Man City, who they roll out on, do they play on Tuesday or Wednesday? Is it Wednesday? I can't remember.
I think it is Wednesday. Let me pull this up. It is Wednesday. Yep. Yeah, against Southampton at the Etihad again.
Yeah, I think it's an early, it's like, you know, 1 p.m. our time. So a little lunchtime match, Brandon, on Wednesday. So, yeah, I mean, what happens there will obviously, you know, dictate a lot of things too, because I actually think this could be a game week where you really need some bench depth. I would not be surprised if we saw a little bit of rotation next weekend. With there's, you know, there's Champions League matches at midweek and next week and
Europa League as well. We're going to talk about Spurs, obviously.
Yep, Europa League as well. And game week 29 is the last game week before international break, so it's all kind of coming to a head. It feels like the middle third of the Premier League, the Premier League season, the fantasy season is really wrapping up over the next 2 weeks. And so it's kind of some really interesting things are starting to happen. And I think we saw with Liverpool's lineup today, you know, I mean, they rolled out like a youth team basically, right? It was like Salah and the kids. It was just a very strange, and Rabo.
Nico Williams gets a run out, you know, Klopp is up to some funny business.
Yeah. So it's really, before we even, you know, I don't want to get over our skis here a little bit. So the theme of this week's podcast, we want to give some actual attention to game week 28, the game week that is right in front of us. And obviously we'll also be keeping an eye on game week 29 because, you know, if you don't have a free hit chip in place, which most people don't at this point, you really do want to have an eye on that with any of your game week 28 transfers. So, but it does not mean you need to just ignore 28. It's just that you need to consider both at the same time. So let's get right into it, Brandon. A quick thank you. We have 3 new patrons this week, and they are all producers.
Unreal.
Can you thank our new producer patrons, Brandon?
Yeah, big welcome to new producers, George Kinney, Shiv Majora. Shiv Majora, actually a longtime Patreon supporter, now upgraded to the producer level, and returning patron Rom Frosk. Thank you for supporting the pod at that highest level. And if you want to learn more about what it is to support Always Cheating, visit us at patreon.com/always cheating. Figure out what you get at various levels of support, and you are supporting what Josh and I do for free on this podcast every Monday of your fantasy season. When you become a supporter, you get an extra ad-free podcast every week. You get our week in review newsletter courtesy of Mini League Mate. At the higher tiers, like that producer level, you get our Make Fantasy Fun Again t-shirt, access to our highly conversational and littered with great poetry this weekend, actually. Slack chat channels, yeah. Which has been a ton of fun ever. This season.
Yeah, I've gotten more into the Slack. I've been trying.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I'm going to take my really negative posts off of Twitter and onto the Slack. And I have found I actually do enjoy that a little bit more. And so I feel like I've been a little more involved in that community of late, and I've really come to appreciate it. So patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go to support the cheaters and do more stuff with the podcast. Also, if you are a... if you have an iPhone, Brandon, you and I have started rolling out a weekly Always Cheating Advice Shop on Friday mornings. You want to get the Locker Room app, and you can find us on there. We're going to chat again this Friday. We're still working out the kinks. So thank you to everyone who joined us. We had a lot of Patreon supporters join us for the last Friday's episode.
Basically, it's like the BBC Radio 606 podcast. Locker Room, it makes it feel like it's a live call-in show. We set it up where if you have dilemmas leading right up to the game week deadline, we're live, we can talk about it. And we're looking to drop, actually, these shows into our main podcast feed in the weeks upcoming, so you can listen in and see what it's all about.
That's true. Maybe you'll actually get on the pod, too, right? All right, so let's take a break and we'll get back and we're going to talk about the neglected, forgotten Game Week 28.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? Maybe your fantasy team is distracting you from other important parts of your life. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in less than 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, expertise that may not be locally available in many areas, and BetterHelp is worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor, and you'll get timely, thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room again. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, and they can make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. So visit betterhelp.com/cheating. That's better H-E-L-P. And join the more than 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. And here's a special offer for Always Cheating listeners. Get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/cheating.
All right, Brandon, Game Week 28 is kicks off on Friday, actually. It's a little bit of a slightly drawn out Game Week 28. It starts on Friday, ends on Monday, but it is not a double game week. Okay, just 10 fixtures for once.
Right, I don't know what to do. I'm just so used to double game weeks every week. This is going to be so banal.
And I think that it's going to be kind of nice because, we have five questions for Game Week 28, and we have a little lightning round to come after that. Jeff Petter says, do you think we, the royal we, will ever lose our complete and absolute obsession with double and blank game weeks and actually just play the week in front of us? I have been thinking about this a lot this week because I think that the double game week obsession with or the obsession with playing a captain who plays in double game week, it's very hard. I would say almost impossible for me to resist the temptation to play. Yeah. It's just like basic gambling, right? Like it's just give yourself two chances, right? Yep. And especially if it's a player like Man City, our team like Man City, where you've got someone like Gundogan, you're like, well, if he's going to get two starts, I fancy him to get something out of those.
Sure. Games. And you think about the Kane shout. Yes, Spurs were hosting Crystal Palace, and Crystal Palace can be abysmal on their day. Yep. But what you're saying there, Kane versus Gundogan, for example, Gundogan having a double game week, you're basically saying I can correctly predict the outcome of one match, the Crystal right. Palace Spurs match, versus get close to predicting two matches for Manchester City. Yeah. And a team that is in, at least up until game week 27 kicked off, Man City were in far more consistent form, the most consistent form team yeah. in the entire league, 21 yeah. wins in a row. And Spurs were, even though, you know, they were kind of leveling up with Gareth Bale getting a starting role and all that, more mercurial.
Yeah. Also, this was so Man United go to Man City and just take it to them basically from the first minute, right? Like literally the first minute. Yeah. You know, I don't know when that Jesus penalty was. It was like 80 seconds into the match or something like that. It was, you know, very quickly. But a week before that, Man City, not even a week before, like half a week before that, Man City went to Crystal Palace, and Palace, you know, kept them from scoring. Palace also kept a clean sheet at midweek, right? So this is a Palace team that's on back-to-back clean sheets at home again. Seems like they maybe figured things out a little bit. They were not as on the beach as we thought they might be. And so, you know, I mean, a road match for Spurs, I mean, I don't think that was like an absolute given that that Kane was just going to go off in that match. That was not what I would have strongly predicted.
No, but just to address Jeff's question of do we consistently overrate double game weeks? Well, it's like what I said at the start of the podcast, where you don't own, as a non-Kane owner, you have to accept the fact that you win some, you lose some. Yeah. And double game weeks, if you talk to seasoned FPL managers, some of their fondest memories will be from explosive mega double game weeks where they cashed in. And I realize game week 26 was a bit of a letdown for some people, but most of us were putting up huge point scores, you know, 80 yeah. to 100 plus. And, you know, maybe you were expecting it to get 125 minimum, right. but right. we were still posting really big scores. So double game weeks, they'll be here forever. They'll continue to be great opportunities. Some will be good, some will be bad.
And just, you know, but for the record, Spurs were home, although I don't think that really changes the argument too much, but just for the record, I know where they played.
Okay. Well, you were confused. I was actually thinking of the one time that we have seen Spurs play live in England was at Wembley. So
that's true.
Maybe yeah. you're yeah. one of those weirdos who just considers Wembley to be the home yeah. of Tottenham Hotspur. And whenever they're not there, they're not at home.
I'm going to continue to captain a player in the double game week. Sounds like you are too. So I'm not going to second guess that part of it too much. I think the blanks are more interesting. I think that when you're in a situation like we are, like we're going to be in game week 29, where you really do have, you have eight teams playing, and of those eight teams, I would say one, two, three, like maybe four of them are good, right? Like Fulham is okay. I'm not going to call them good though, right? So like Leeds, Villa, Spurs, West Ham, right? And then you have Fulham, Arsenal, who are both mediocre, and then you have Brighton and Newcastle, who are both pretty bad at the moment.
Yeah, right, right.
So, you know, in a situation like that, I think there's kind of a feeling that, I really want to make sure I field a full team in game week 29. And I really think that people put too much of an onus on having a full team for those. And especially if you're looking at, you know, taking minus fours, yeah. I really don't like that. And so trying to maximize double game week, I think that makes sense. Trying to maximize a blank game week, I do not encourage. And I think there's a very, I mean, like the Bamford thing, I'm really strongly considering that. And I mean, we'll see what Watkins looks like away to Newcastle, especially if Grealish plays again. You know, it looks like he might. Yeah. So, you know, but regardless, it's very possible that I only have nine players that play in game week 29. That seems completely fine to me.
I largely agree with what you're saying, maybe just to throw a counterpoint in here. So you're talking about when you're in the higher ranks and even wherever you are in the ranking table,
yeah.
one point, 2 points, these are actually pretty significant margins.
Sure.
So I think that is a positive way to look at a blank game week and say, I'm not going to necessarily move heaven and earth, but I'm going to move a few things around so I can get an extra player for game week 29, because an extra one or two or three or four points can actually be quite significant to where you're going to finish that game week and at the end of the season. So I just want to say that for the record. I think where you get into trouble is you move your team around to fit an extra player in for the blank who you actually don't need nor want long term.
Right.
Like I'm looking at a double game week residue in my team right now. Ben Mee, who I brought in for a double game week, is still sticking around, sucking up, right, you know, 4.9 million right now. I've already lost value on this dude. Edward Mendy has been on my bench for more than a month at this point. Yep. Calvert-Lewin is somebody that we really need to talk about for the forgotten game week, double game week 28. So it's just like a cautionary tale of, there's upside to bringing players in for doubles or blanks, but you have to be prepared to either live with them, or I think a lot of managers are considering just straight up wild carding when that international break comes around shortly after game week 29.
By the way, are you considering making a goalkeeper transfer for 29? You don't have a playing keeper for that match, right?
That's the real decision point for me. It looks like the kind of like planned moves I have between now and then, I won't have any extra money. My hope was to move Edward Mendy to Martinez. I'm not going to have enough cash to do that the way I kind of currently schedule my transfers out. So it looks like I actually might move Ederson to Martinez. Now, point taken about taking hits and moving players around, and why would you drop the one goalkeeper who has more clean sheets than Martinez to get Martinez in? The thing is Martinez has been one of my great weak points all season.
He should win the Player of the Year award or something. He's great. He's so good.
The PFA Player of the Year award goes to Emmy Martinez. And that's it. Like, he can kill you any game week. He's routinely is posting, you know, 7 to 10 point scores. So especially in a week in which he's just going to be heavily owned and heavily played and not rotated at all amongst managers who have rotating GKs, he could really put me to the sword. So that's my current thinking.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense, and maybe that frees you up. I mean, you're probably going to wild card shortly after that anyway, but in theory, it could free you up in game week 30 or 31 to bring in a De Bruyne or a Sterling, or, you know, if you wanted to like really make a big swing, you know.
And Martinez is a player I want anyway for the rest of the season. Like, it's as I was saying, it's stupid that I've tried to dance around him at this point. So this is kind of a reason for me to finally get him.
Yeah. Every season, I feel like everyone has that one player that they've just never brought in. You know, for me, that was actually Diaz until last week, where I somehow the whole at least since they got pretty strong defensively.
Game he hasn't kept a clean sheet since. Thank you very much.
He did score a goal. So I'll take that.
And I've been thinking about this because just as a kind of related note, I hate Crystal Palace. I absolutely hate Crystal Palace because they are killing me this season. If you'll recall that match in which Salah started on the bench against Palace, came on as a sub, late sub, scored a brace and an assist, two bonus or something like this. And at that point, I didn't have Salah because Salah was doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And after that Palace performance, it's like, this guy's just going to bury me. So I just need to get him in. And he did absolutely nothing except for one game week in which a lot of us captained him for a brace. And I tried to argue that justified everything. Mm-hmm. But basically, Crystal Palace made Salah look so amazing. I had to get him in, and he's kind of been an albatross ever since. So flash forward to game week 27, where Kane looks amazing against Crystal Palace. Guess who I don't have? Harry Kane. Guess who I'm bringing in for game week 28? Harry Kane. So I am fearful of the Palace effect.
It's a tricky thing. I don't think I would have burned four either if I were in your position, you know? So I mean, it's easy to look back. I mean, I know we already talked about it once in the podcast, but just again, I feel like that it was it was reasonable not to do that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Just as I said, it's a worst case scenario sort of outcome. It stings, it hurts, but you can't fault the logic.
Which brings us to question number two, Brandon. David Conway says, how essential are the Tottenham attackers? I'm potentially eyeing up Kane and Bale to join Son in my team, but I'm not sure if I should be focusing my efforts elsewhere. And we talk about the players that you are struggle with or that you don't own. And for me, I have bought and sold Son 3 times now, and I'm looking at buying him a 4th time this week. How is that even possible? Like, what? Like, it just seems like
you
how
just
can
can't
I bought
quit
and sold him 4 times. Like, she just kept him, right? So it's very, very strange, the situation there. So I guess the first to talk about the real hot property here, Gareth Bale, very expensive, has been a waste of space. I think you could say the first 20
weeks
of the season.
I had said a couple of times that he looked like he was just taking the absolute piss out of this Spurs club when he had this long move. But and here he is, having
he
a great time.
Scoring braces every other match, doing that thing where he puts his tongue out, like, I've always been here. I've always been good. Uh-huh. You're like, really? Like, you've had like an ankle problem for 7, like, you know, it's like, it's, he went, I mean, it's interesting. I guess you look back at some,
it's like he's been cut off from real society for more than a decade, Josh. It's almost like that.
It's very strange. So Gareth Bale now has started the last 3 matches. He does not get heavy minutes in any of them. He played a half in game week 25. He played 69 minutes in game week 26, 66 in 20. All right. So he played 66 and 69 in the double game week in 26.
Nice.
And then 69 again, double nice, in game week 27. So, you know, not playing crazy minutes, always at risk of an injury, right? For any number of reasons, even if he just needs like a, he has a headache or something, right? So we don't really know what we're going to get with him, but he also has, like, in the last 3 games they played, he scored, 35 points, right? So 35 points. His ownership is 3.7%. They're one of the few teams that are they're playing game week 29. If you are ranked 289,000 in the world and you are trying to make up some ground, shouldn't you just bring him in and captain him in game week 29?
Well, you should 100% bring him in, definitely, without a doubt. The way I'm thinking of Spurs now is Spurs have just in the last couple of weeks morphed into what I would call expensive leads.
Uh-huh.
So you're like, if the question is, should I be putting my attention elsewhere instead of Spurs? No, because comparable assets would be Bruno, you already have him. Don't worry about it. Liverpool, get rid of them. Bring in Gareth Bale. Yep. Man City is, they have the potential to put together an attack comparable to what we saw against Palace from Spurs. But the rotation of the lineup is a question mark. And the way that they do share the points around that City squad is a question mark, which makes Spurs the expensive leads, because at this point you have a very solid sense of what lineup Jose Mourinho is going to come out with. And you have a very solid sense that their defense is terrible. So you can put the Spurs defense to the side, because we don't need it.
Should have conceded. I don't know. Will Zaha. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh, yeah. The came off the post onto Hugo Lloris. It was that was an incredible shot. Respect to Zaha for that. But it's all upside for Son, Kane, and Bale. And I agree with you. This is an opportunity for any and all managers, I think. There is every possibility that Gareth Bale spontaneously combusts Thursday night in a Europa League match or something like that. He's dead. But I think it's definitely worth a risk.
I think it is too. It just comes down to those ranking tiers. I think we talked about this on last week's podcast a little bit, like your strategy if you're leading, chasing, or way back, right? And I think if you're leading, I still think that Son is the transfer. Like, for me, I'm looking to move Salah this week. I don't have to, but I'm inclined to do it. Mostly because he is the most expensive player in the game. And he doesn't score anymore. And then the team, bit of an issue. I mean, obviously he scored a ton on the season, but really, I mean, if you look back at, you know, I mean, even the matches where he has scored something, it's like, it kind of like took like a moment of magic, right? I mean,
a terrible VAR decision against the return fixture of Fulham where Salah scores on a penalty.
Yeah,
that sort of stuff.
They're just not in flow right now. And, you know, I really do think, I mean, if it's like sometimes like the explanation is so obvious and is repeated so many times that we like don't want to believe it anymore and we look for something else. But I really think the Man City's play this season and what Liverpool have done without Virgil van Dijk and you know, how Man City played since Diaz joined the team. I just think that we just like, you cannot overstate how important a really great center back is to a team, you know, and just how much they stop all the mistakes, you know, they allow the fullbacks to push forward. You know, someone like Van Dijk, you know, starts the play. And I actually think Diaz is pretty active as well. You know, he's not like bombing forward. It's not like
and just look at Fulham. Fulham, I mean, it's just an absolute miracle what Scott Parker has done with that squad with no preseason of any kind and had to basically buy a whole new squad to figure this out. Yeah. And their center back pairing, it's like, hey, it's that easy.
Yeah.
But you can see Fulham were able to kind of transform their Premier League trajectory based on that center back pairing. So you're totally right.
Yeah. And so I think that's really, you know, the issue. And I mean, just now, like they just don't have anybody back there. And so it just, you know, Robertson is forced to play back a little bit further. It just doesn't, you know, I just don't think
they just rely so much on Nico Williams right now. It's just,
Yeah. Or Curtis, you know, Curtis, I mean, they're just relying on a lot of young players at the moment, or like, you know, kind of newly bedded center backs. It's just honestly, I just think the obvious explanation is still the right one, which is that they are decimated by injuries, and those injuries have had a cascading effect on everybody within that team. And and they've also just played a ton of minutes, right, going deep into the Champions League, you know, multiple times over the last couple of seasons. Obviously not last summer, although last summer was so weird anyway that, you know, it's sort of it was just a weird, so they just played a lot of minutes. The intensity of winning the league last year, we often see a team drop off after winning the title. And it just feels like they're out of gas. They're just completely out of gas. And so it's hard to look at Salah and think, oh yeah, he away to Wolves in game week 28, this guy's going to turn it around.
Yeah.
You know?
And I mean, we're kind of jumping ahead in the running order to Boston Prof's question, who asks, is Salah officially over? I had regarded him as a season keeper, and he still has the fourth most FPL points, but Liverpool are a pale shadow of their former selves. And Mikey also wants to know who the best Salah replacements are, and that I think plays into David's question about Spurs. So, like, I agree with everything you're saying about Liverpool and Salah, Josh, but I don't think like it's a helpful question to ask, is Salah officially over? Like, in FPL, just like you were saying about Son, Josh, you've bought and sold him at least three, going on four times this season. Yeah. You never have to truly say goodbye
to anyone. Yeah, and it's never really hurt me. I mean, honestly, it feels weird that I've bought and sold him so much, but I can't say that it's like had a massive impact on my season. You know, I mean, you just have to do it sometimes. Yeah.
The convenient thing about the Salah problem happening now is that Liverpool blank in 29 and no one has any value tied up in Mo Salah. So this is the perfect time to dump him.
Yeah.
You can always bring him back at some point at no extra added cost to you. So I would feel exceedingly comfortable dropping Salah right now. So Mikey's question about who are the best Salah replacements. So Son and Bale are the obvious targets,
right,
just based on the conversation that we were having. In light of that, could you still argue for bringing in somebody like Jesse Lingard or Saka? And now, Aubameyang is really making a case to be that guy.
Speaking of locker room, right? Like, I'm glad that we didn't release that pod. How how loud wrong both of us were on Aubameyang. I just wasn't seeing it. I mean, he hadn't started. I think he'd started two of the last five matches, and so you know, I didn't think it was given he'd even start this weekend. And suddenly there he is leading the attack, and you know, wrong footing Pope. And I mean, way to Burnley. I thought that was kind of a tough match as well. And so, honestly, they should have scored, you know, a couple of goals in that match. A lot of handballs and, you know, like, I don't even know.
crazy officiating in that match. Yeah. To be fair to our take on Aubameyang, though, he had that early goal, but you didn't see a whole lot of Aubameyang after that.
But by then it didn't matter.
Because you'd seen everything. I think we do have to consider him. So I think a question I'll throw to you, Josh, is if you're in a situation where let's assume for this hypothetical that you already have Harry Kane up top and you are moving Mo Salah out ahead of game week 28.
Yeah.
What are the reasons why you would bring in Aubameyang over somebody like Heung-Min Son or Gareth Bale?
I don't know. It's more fun. You know, I don't know. I mean, I sort of feel like, I can't speak for the entire 8 million people who play the game, but I really felt this weekend, especially with Gundogan blanking and, you know, effective ownership, which I don't even want to talk about in every single podcast because it gets so tedious to talk about it. But, you know, just as a quick refresher for anyone who wasn't listening or doesn't follow something like effective ownership, you know, basically if you own a player, you have 100% of that player. If you captain that player, you have 200%, right? So the effective ownership is a bunch of sites do this now. They give you the effective ownership of a player. And it basically is within the top 10K or within your own kind of band of rankings, right? So like around say 100K overall. At 100K, how many people own the player that you have in your team, right? So so my case, I had Gundogan and his effective ownership was 150%, right? So he's almost universally owned. And then from that, about half the managers, I think he's 90% owned. And then about 6% of the managers had captained him this week. So, you know, we complain about effective ownership, but for me, it kind of meant I was insulated against anything bad happening. Like, you know, it was almost like nothing could really happen this week.
Such an American point of view.
Yeah. But I mean, like, you know, which I don't love, and I would find that very frustrating if I was, you know, 300K overall, like, how am I going to get ahead? But I think the problem that people get into is just kind of thinking that, well, I've got to get the person who scored last week. Right. I mean, like Aubameyang, you know, just like, I don't know, like if you watch the highlights and you feel like there's something there,
yeah,
you should do it. I mean, because I just think that there's a little too much of everybody kind of debating, oh, maybe I'll go Diaz captain, maybe I'll go Kane captain, and then we all default to the same player. And I feel like this is happening more this season than I can ever remember. And it feels like now might be the time to try to be a little bit different. You know, like we're starting to get towards that point in the season where you really have to take some risks.
Well, and to the theme of game week 28 being the forgotten game week, I think the marquee fixture in game week 28, both for the broadcast schedule and for fantasy, is the North London Derby.
Yeah.
It's Arsenal Spurs, because I think there is a lot of FPL potential in that match. And if you're talking about these Salah replacements, you've got Spurs versus Lingard versus Saka, and then Leeds is really the only other Leeds, and maybe if Jack Grealish is fit again.
Sure.
But the problem with Leeds is that they play a watertight Chelsea at the moment. So Leeds is kind of a non-starter for game week 28.
Yeah.
Jesse Lingard, because he is on loan from Manchester United, cannot play against his parent club in game week 28. Lingard is off the table. So you're basically just left with Spurs players. So I'm thinking if you're not eyeing up a Spurs player for that Salah slot, you're kind of better off holding Salah just for one more week and then making either that Lingard move or in game week 29.
Yeah, I think Saka too. I mean, did Saka even get a return? I guess he didn't, because there was only one goal in that match. I still think that Saka might be the Arsenal pick too, right? And I think that there's a trap that we can fall into sometimes where you're like, well, I want the best player on Arsenal, and that means the most expensive player on the team, right? Yes. Like, because you just sort of in your brain, it's like, it's hard not to, right? You see, like, it's like, you know, it's like the reason why it's so hard not to want to get Kevin De Bruyne over Gundogan, even though Gundogan has been pretty consistently outperforming, at least from an FPL perspective, Gundogan all season. vice versa. Kind of ones when outperforming KDB. And so I think that, you know, Saka, I think, is
KDB,
probably
the, by the way, looked terrible in that Manchester derby.
Yeah. Somebody said, that Barney Rone, I think, a reporter said, I think it was at halftime, he said that KDB was playing every minute like it was the 87th minute, and he alone could win this match for Man City. Yes. It was like real, like Steven Gerrard style. Right?
Yeah,
like,
I'm just gonna, true.
Yeah, I'm just gonna run around beating every ball. And yeah, I mean, you know, he did create some chances for sure. But yeah, I think that Saka probably, if you had to, like, I mean, even not just like moving forward, just this season, I think that Saka is the best player on Arsenal.
It's not Granit Xhaka, I'll grant you that. I agree. And yeah, if you watch Arsenal week in, week out, Saka is definitely the one that jumps out more than Aubameyang or Lacazette or any of the other attackers in terms of the most dynamic and the most involved. And he will go out wide and he'll come inside. Like everything you want from an attacking FPL asset, Saka is giving you that, and he's giving it to you at a really cut rate price. So I do tend to agree that Saka, there's so much fantasy upside with him because he allows you to do so much else with your fantasy team while giving you a lot of what Aubameyang would give you otherwise.
It's going to be weird, isn't it? I mean, if you go with players like Saka, or even, you know, if I drop, I mean, it's just amazing how much dropping Salah is going to free up money for everybody. Like, I'm not going to remember where to put it. You know, it's like, I'm just like, even there's not even like some like massive expensive defender that you'd want for game week 29.
That should be a new chip, the Roth IRA chip, where you could actually at some point in the season put like £2 million into a Roth account, and then it could actually accrue value for you, and then you could cash it in at some point down the line. I love that idea.
Yeah, we're just coming with great chip ideas every week now, Brandon. So I think what's interesting about Gaming 28, we did talk about it as the Forgotten Gaming, but I think you're right. I mean, you started to talk about it a minute ago. Once you start eliminating some of these matches as like play, like places you want to make your transfers, you almost kind of default back to bringing in players who play in game week 29, right? Like, so you have Aston Villa. If you don't have if you don't have Villa players, I mean, you said you don't have Martinez, you know, that's certainly a Matt Target. I think that Grealish, if he's back and you want to be really risky, I think that's like a move you can consider as well. Like I said, Leeds, Chelsea, tricky match. Palace, West Brom, you don't want anyone in that. Everton, Burnley, maybe you hold on to DCL, you know, probably one of those matches. I don't think he's essential for that, but I don't see Everton scoring a ton in that match.
Yeah, it's like you were saying about the idea of being insulated as a fantasy manager. Calvert-Lewin is not going to hurt anybody. He could post a decent score against Burnley for sure. Burnley can be quite bad in particular matches, but he's not going to, unless your particular mini league rival is really up on DCL, he's not going to burn you.
Richarlison feels like the player you'd want now anyway, right?
Who's afraid of that guy? Not me.
Man City, Fulham, you almost certainly already have three Man City players. And then you're down to, Southampton, Brighton. Okay, don't want anybody on that one. Yeah, that's a pass. I mean, you know, now that Ings is probably out, maybe you can make a move for a Brighton defender earlier if you wanted. Leicester, Sheffield, that's a pass. Arsenal, Spurs, we've already talked about that one. Man United, West Ham, I think. I actually don't think this is a bad match for Antonio. I think this could be a match where it's interesting because Man United just looked so good on the road to Man City, but it just seems like a match where they're going to like be on the ball all the time, and then and then West Ham are going to get a couple opportunities to break. And
I think that they did. I think that United's defense actually looked good because Harry Maguire and the Swedish guy, what's his name?
Lindelof.
They actually weren't asked to do very much. So they had precious little opportunity to screw up. And I think you're right. Like West Ham could ask a little bit more of them, and Antonio is a total handful.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So it could be, you know, it's something to think about at least. And then Wolves, Liverpool, that just, again, that feels like a full pass. I mean, I think you're right. You know, it's never like holding on to Mo Salah is never one of these things that's going to like, just be something that like, you just like, you, like, you know, you strongly argue, you know, for dropping him. Like, I mean, I would probably drop him this week. There's a chance I don't, but
you're not going to look like a dead ghost team if you still have Salah in game week 28.
Exactly. All right. Which brings me to the final question for our game week 28 preview, which is, who is the best game week 29? Wow. See, Brandon, that tells you where my brain is right there. I wrote game week 29. That tells you everything about this poor forgotten game week. Who, Brandon, is the best game week 28 captain?
This is really a tough question because I don't know. I'm kind of leaning toward either Bruno Fernandes or Harry Kane. And you might say the Kane pick is recency bias and all of that, but
yeah, form, you know, too.
The North London Derby is a narrative, and I do believe in narratives in the Premier League. And Kane is just a classic FPL asset where he has so many routes to scoring points. He's on penalties. He's got an insane number of assists this season as well.
Yeah.
So in a week in which I'm a little scared off of that Fulham fixture for Man City. I mean, I think that's an enticing fixture for first place team against 18th place team. But it just doesn't feel like a huge upside match for your City assets unless you have somebody like Sterling. If you had Sterling, then or KDB, and they don't play midweek, then I might be tempted there. But I think Bruno at home, good. Harry Kane against Arsenal, good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really does come down to those two as well. Maybe Bale if you want to really be bold and throw a wild card, you know, pick in there. But yeah, I mean, I think that's it. I think, So I mean, I think I'm looking at Bruno personally. I just think that for one thing, it's just their ability to win penalties is
unparalleled.
Yeah, it's unparalleled. So there's always the chance that he's going to win a penalty. I also thought he played pretty well today. Credited a couple of chances. He was really, you know, he had done some press conference where someone asked him a question about his lack of. I always think it's kind of bullshit when people talk about how like big players don't do well in big games. Like nobody, like it's very rare. Like Sergio Aguero is the only player I can think of who can like consistently does really well in big rivalry matches. Like most of the time, those games are cagey or the goals are scored in weird ways, right? Like it's like somebody makes a mistake and you know, it's like it, you know, so it's like there's matches where, you know, good defense is going to lock down the best player. And so someone else is usually going to be required to score. So anyway, I thought that Bruno acquitted himself pretty well. And I think West Ham's defense is fine, but I just think that Man United are going to get plenty of chances to score. And I think if they get chances to score, then Bruno's going to be involved.
I'm with you on Bruno's performance against City. And I watched his post-match interview. And I think when you watch Bruno play, you kind of question his sanity because, you know, he often has this look of like, I'm surrounded by morons. Like, what do you want me to do here? he was in such a great mood in the post-match interview, obviously because they won, but he seemed completely calm, completely content. And the interviewer asked him about his goal celebration. He covered his ears and he's just so delightful. He said, well, that's for my children and my wife. They put up with so much. Like, this is not easy for anyone. And certainly football players don't have it easy either. And I just want to make sure that I signal to my family that I really appreciate them. So you're just like,
so he must be hanging out with Juan Mata. He sounds like a great guy.
but it's like you want those guys who are like their heads are on straight and tight. And I'm feeling very pro Bruno today, Josh. If you can't tell.
Well, it sounds like we've made our decision. Then Bruno's a nice guy and a great fantasy asset. Let's take a quick break. I have three lightning round questions, but I want us to start fresh and answer those questions right after this. All right, Brian, we're back. Lightning round. First question. We started to talk about this a little bit in the last section, but Paul Goldsmith asked, that was an interesting question. What does that Man City, Man United game actually mean? !
What does it mean? I mean, I think it means situation normal. Everything is as it has been for like the last couple of years. Man United have had City's number for the last two seasons with these derbies. You could go all the way back to that Paul Pogba comeback. But today, the day that this podcast is going to be hitting everyone's eardrums, marks the one-year anniversary when you and I, Josh, were in Old Trafford for last season's second Manchester derby, in which United handily won 2-0. I mean, City did not mount much of an attack at all. Yep. So, and I generally agree with your point about big fixtures and being cagey affairs, and they can cut one way or another. City were okay to lose this match. And I think given all their ambitions to even quadruple this season, their mind is just kind of keeping everyone fit, keeping their pride intact. Obviously, they don't want to lose, but I don't think there are any major takeaways.
Well, I would say my takeaways are that KDB, I mean, if I was looking at it through a fantasy lens, right?
Okay, sure.
It's that, you know, I do think it's pretty clear. We talked about this with the Barney Rooney quote, but KDB does diminish Gundogan's value. It's very clear now, right? That Gundogan may even be droppable at this point. I mean, he's represented such good value, but I think that Gundogan could be better value if KDB would let him do more. It sort of feels like he's, you know, it's like he's not in any of the free kicks anymore. He doesn't quite know what his role is. It felt like he started to come into his own a little bit, like the last 20 minutes of that match. So I'll be really interested to see if he plays it midweek, and if he does, if he, especially if KDB doesn't play, you know, if he has a little bit more of that free role that KDB typically enjoys.
I wonder if KDB if he's rested against Fulham to play Champions League. Does City play Champions League this week or the following week?
Well, it's the following because they play on Wednesday.
Right. Of course. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I still think Gundogan was getting into decent positions.
Yeah.
He could have easily had some attacking returns in that derby. Yeah. It just wasn't just
the, it's more the, like he's on notice now, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's true. But would you consider dumping Gundogan? So I think what you're saying is the takeaway, and I agree with this, is that Kevin De Bruyne is not ready for our fantasy teams yet.
Right.
Then the follow-up question is, do we need to think about Gundogan still being, like, if I'm wildcarding in a couple of weeks, am I getting rid of Gundogan?
Well, I mean, since KDB's come back, there's been 5 matches. One of them he was injured, so I guess we won't count that one. But the 4 since then, it's been 3-2-4-2, right? So 4 consecutive matches, and the 4 came in 8 minutes of play, right? On a shot that was that you know was rebounded.
A fantasy assist,
fantasy assist, exactly. So, I mean, the evidence is there. I think that he's not. I mean, you know, before that it was 19, 13, 8, 3, 14, 10, 8, God. Right? And that basically
salad days, my God.
Yeah, and it coincided almost exactly with KDB leaving with an injury. I mean, not completely, because he had done well even with KDB on the pitch. He had 9 in the Chelsea match and 17, 11 in Newcastle match the game week before that. But, you know, when KDB was out, he was really good. And so
he was so much more focal and central. The team. He was kind of like, when KDB was out, it was like Gundogan became the best of David Silva and KDB both at the same time. Yeah. And there's no position like that when Kevin is on the pitch.
With a little bit like Raheem Sterling thrown in or something, right? He's like in front of the box, so like the easiest happens. Like, you're like, you know, it's crazy. Like, maybe we'll just never see that run of form again. But I think he stays on my team at least through game week 31. They play Leeds at home in 31. So I don't think it's like any kind of urgent thing, but it's like I said, he's on notice. I think the other key thing here is that I am, and I'm not alone here. This is going to be a very major talking point from everybody this week. But Luke Shaw looks like he's the real thing, right? He's only 5.1 million. He's played fantastic basically since, you know, about mid-season, I suppose. And, you know, he's on corner kicks now. He's got 5 assists in the season, in addition to the goal that he scored today. I think the affordability is a key factor here too, right? Because you can just get him for 5.1. I mean, that's like, you know, you can get him for the same price that you can get a Soufal or something like that.
I'm dubbing Luke Shaw Triple B. Beef Boy Buzzcut. That's my official name for Luke Shaw now. And I agree. I think he's tremendous.
Yeah.
It's wild to watch him in action because it's the way he wears his socks that makes his legs look that much shorter than everyone else looks, is on the team. And
he
then
looks like four foot 11, right? He looks very short.
Yeah. He's like a Gimli out there, doing his thing. But
yeah, I still think of that time when James Corden was at Old Trafford and he had a magnetic kid on, and everybody was talking about how Luke Shaw like let himself go over the summer a little bit. It just sort of speaks to, the reputation that Luke Shaw had.
Sure, you know, going into Beef Boy Buzzcut.
Yep.
But if you look at Manchester United's fixtures after game week 29, it's Brighton at home, Spurs, Burnley at home, Leeds, Liverpool. It's not bad. So it's a tricky thing because I think if you want to do Luke Shaw, well, that's actually not a good point. I was going to say it's better to do him now or never again, but he seems like the optimal wild card fullback. So,
yeah, right. I think I don't think he's an every week starter necessarily, but you know, I'd love to have him for that Brighton home match. I'd love to have him for that Burnley home match. Wouldn't mind having him for the Leeds match in game week 33. So, I he's maybe not like in that, like kind of Ben Chilwell when he was doing really well territory where you're like, I don't care who this guy's playing. I just want to have him because his attack returns are so good. But, I do think that he's great value.
One other thing that we should mention is that Marcus Rashford is getting scans on his ankle. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're recording this late Sunday night, so we haven't seen any reporting on that. So if he did do any real damage to his ankle in the derby, then that, I don't know, does that dampen the attacking output of Manchester United? I guess I wouldn't say totally, because you've got Greenwood that you can slot in there, and he'll do in a pinch, and Martial and Cavani have been doing a decent number, decent amount of rotating.
I don't think Cavani is out for any long stretch of time, so I think that Martial can certainly play on the left and Greenwood on the right, and so I think that, you know, I think that would still work. I mean, Martial and Cavani have started at least one match this season for sure. So I think Rashford has not been, he's not having his best season. So I don't see that as a massive loss for Man United. All right. Two more questions. These are more in the traditional lightning round mold here, Brandon. Okay.
30 AJ, seconds flat.
AJ says, this is a long one. It must have taken a minute to write this question. Says, so far this season, home teams have won 37% of their games, while away teams have won 39% of their games, 24% are a draw. Do we need to extract the he has a home match out of our thinking until fans return, or even reverse it?
Flip it, reverse it. I love this. AJ spent more time writing this question than I will answering it. no, you don't have to consider home or away at all this season. It doesn't matter.
I agree. And it's not something I think about too much in general. that was like a long pause. Well, just like thinking.
I mean,
like the kombucha girl.
There are like mitigating circumstances, and you could always sort of like throw. Well, they're playing in their comfortable environs as tiebreakers.
I was thinking about like Liverpool at home at Anfield, right? Like Liverpool at Anfield with a full stadium, I think would be something I would factor into like a captaincy decision or something like that, right? What I was going to say is that I don't think about home and away that much in general, but I it's just been so long now since we've had fans in the stands that it's like, I can't even remember what that's like. You know, we're going to get two matches now. Like that's officially confirmed now. So game weeks 37 and 38 will have fans in the stands. So we are,
what could go wrong?
Yeah. We are a mere 8 weeks away from something approaching normalcy being back, which is pretty exciting, I have to say.
Yeah. So save your home and away takes, AJ, for game week 37. And then it's the real deal, because we've talked about this before, the reverse fixture of Fulham Liverpool at the Cottage, there were actual fans 25% of in the stands, and you could feel the lift that Fulham got from that. So until fans are back in the stands, it's kind of a non-starter.
Yeah, totally agreed. Final question. That's a good one. This is from Luke Williams, a.k.a. Disable. We met him Brandon, and are always treating meetup a year ago, yesterday or something. He says, and I haven't even done the like repost from a year ago because it's just too sad.
It really is. Yeah, we met so many of you at Coin Laundry and Exmouth Market, and what a great time. And so if you were there at the fan event last March, we miss you. It was so good to see you.
We're gonna try
can't
to
wait to do it again.
As soon as we can, exactly. He says, be honest with yourselves. How much emphasis do you put on last week's points? Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing?
Are we talking about like last week's points in terms of like what my squad scored or what other players scored?
I saw it as what other players scored. That's how I saw it, because that is something we all wrestle with.
So there's a fine line between points chasing and recognizing form. And I think that's, and I'm glad that Luke asked this question, because I remember Luke actually triple captained Gareth Bale last week.
He probably brought it up so that we would bring that up again on the podcast.
So it's a perfect example where that is just like a flex on Luke's part to just on the hint that Gareth Bale is going to get into that starting lineup and then just betting on what he's going to do. And I would say then that is just chasing last week's points. But where we are now, 1 week later with Gareth Bale is, I can think it takes as little as two match weeks for a player to show true form. And it's less like the individual player. You can see the way the team is set up, the way other surrounding players are responding to that player.
Yeah.
So Gareth Bale has gone from incredible punt by Luke to a decent form player where I am placing a lot of bets on Bale's last week's points.
I think this podcast in general is pretty focused on that kind of stuff too. I don't think you'll often hear us say, you should consider Mape because the underlying XG points to a player who's ready to bust or whatever. That's like a thing that people do, right? Like Jonty has his stats.
Expected goals.
Yeah, like expected
goals imminent.
Goals imminent table, right? And I think those things are really valuable for sure. And it's actually a nice thing to back up if you're watching these matches and you think, wow, like whomever, right? Like Sadio Mane is just – looks so dangerous in these matches. It's crazy that he has, zero returns in the last four or whatever. And then you look at these tables and you see that, he's just really underperforming his XG. And I guess it seems less fun when someone does well to think, well, it's just, statistically a complete blip. And of course, in some ways that is the case, right? I mean, like rarely will a player have a hat trick and be on 3xG, right? He'll, unless he had a bunch of other chances as well. I mean, any one
they're
chance.
They're all penalties.
Exactly. Like it's just, so it's kind of, it's more fun when the returns are good to do that. I think I have a tendency to get a little negative sometimes. I actually think I'm more negative in my reactions than I am as a manager. I think I'm a little more rational when it comes. I never rage transfer, for example, ever.
Yeah.
And nor do I almost ever take like transfers early on in the week. Like I just have to get rid of this player. But I certainly feel annoyed and will rage about how awful that team is. And that will inform ultimately the transfer I make that week often. But I don't know. I mean, it just seems like a more fun way to play to me somehow. Like watching the matches, seeing who looks good and then buying or selling them.
You can approach it like, oh, so-and-so is asking, is Lingard's first start for West Ham? He gets a brace. Is he good? Should I get him? And you're like, come on. I mean, he's never going to do that again. Or you could say, and that's probably based on bias or what have you.
Yeah, we've all seen him play at Man United. It's not like he was, scoring braces.
Right. There's this other way of thinking, too, where a player gets a bunch of points and then you say, well, what's the point of me bringing them in now? Yeah. Now I don't bring them in to prove that I was right to never get them in the first place, hoping that they never score again. And that's probably the least helpful way of managing your fantasy team is it's okay. Like what I was saying about Kane, like it's kind of a bummer that I've missed out on this week's haul, but what's the only way I can correct that? I can't go retroactively get those points. The only way I can correct that is just to get the guy in.
It's only annoying when you make the transfer. You know, it's like when the game week starts, you know, it's like I took a -8 to bring in Diaz and Kane last week, right? And like, but like then it's like it's just over, you know? It's like
then they belong to you and they're yours alone.
Exactly. Then you're in your team and you don't have to worry about what they're going to do anymore. Yeah, you know? Right, and so,
Well, I think that's a pretty good summation of kind of where we are on last week's points. That would actually be a great name for an FPL podcast. Last week's points.
That would be. That's just a free one, Brian.
There you go.
That one's trademarked that before someone snags it. Thanks everyone for listening. That's the end of the podcast. Good luck in game week 28. Good luck in there's two matches tomorrow and then another match on Wednesday. So we're gonna have a real. It's weird. The double game week feels like it almost doesn't like it's like it doesn't feel to you like it's like who cares what happens on Wednesday. I don't know why I feel that way because of course some crazy things could happen, but I'm sort of like. It's tomorrow. It's the Leeds West Ham match. Yeah. The match I'm really interested in, and then the Wednesday one I'm like whatever.
There's like the City Southampton match is less likely to flip mini leagues and flip ranks. It's just
everyone's got three Man City players.
Yeah, I mean your problem is you're a Cancelo owner. You saw what I saw on that pitch. Mm. Cancelo had probably what is his worst professional match of all.
Totally, time. Absolutely leaving on a wild card. Absolutely, 100%.
So, yeah, rotation might be less the points on the field, more the rotation that could hurt people in that City Southampton match.
So that's the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will do a Patreon podcast later this week. We'll also do our advice shop on Locker Room later this week. So if you don't have that app downloaded yet, go ahead and do so. And we'll put out the call when we start recording that. I think we might tighten it up a little bit. But the last one went on for like 97 minutes. We didn't know when to end it. So maybe a little short.
We don't have a producer helping us here. We're just out on our own. We're flapping in the wind.
Figuring things out. So alwayscheating.com or patreon.com/alwayscheating is where you can go. Alwayscheating.com is where you can find out more about us and and find episodes and social media and all that stuff. Quick thank you to our producer patrons. Brendan, do you want to thank our patrons this week?
Oh, 100%. Big thanks to Trevor Ingerson, Mike DiPietro, Chris Howell, Andy Penn, Martin Savage, Brian T, the Big Gaffer, Bob Ascoon, Jeff Husby, Ben Grant, James Holland, Jazz Binning, Dave Wegner, Lodahl, Nick Wright, Jim Payne, Brian Chin, Blair Jacobson, Travis West, Victor Forbrick, Skogang, Paul Herzig, Kaya Christine Lalang, Andy Portlock, Toothless Gibbon, Lindsay Rostel, Anton Markov, at FPL Merch, Carrie Swanson, Kieran Screeton, Francis Mann, Chris Carter, Blue Nose Stew, Mikey Uong, Bruce Kerr, Nicholas Vernadakis, Sam Schauer, Will Husby, Rich Evans, Bobby Styles, Future Media Group FPL, Ben Sweeney, and our newest producers, George Kinney, Shiv Majora, and Rom Frosk. Of course, subscribe to the Always Cheating Podcast. This way, Josh, you'll never miss an episode because sometimes there are forgotten game weeks, like game week 28.
That's true.
There will never be another forgotten episode of Always Cheating if you subscribe. And if you have the time, give us a quick rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Acast, etc. And you gave the website alwayscheating.com, Josh, so I'll just leave it there. I'll just leave you with a robust and healthy Poku forever.
All right. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's UNIFYDHealing.com/BlueWire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.